On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Winter Lake, author of The Satanic Paradigm.
Even if you practice Satanism and you try and live for the moment or live for yourself, you're going to die. You're probably going to get sick and die. No one escapes that. In the end, we all face the same fate. So isn't there kind of that same contradiction, I guess, in the hypocrisy of Christianity? Doesn't that also apply over here to Satanism?
It does, in a sense. But yes, the hypocrisy exists probably even more so in any satanic or occult practices. To a lot of people, it's a phase that they're going through. They are very destructive and dangerous people, some of them. They're not nice people. Christians, I mean, they can be pretty ruthless too, but Satanists are not. I mean, satanic practitioners on different levels can be very, very dangerous, probably more so than Christians. And a lot of Satanists don't like to say that, and they want to glaze it over and say, oh, we're all nice, just get along bands and so on. That's not necessarily the truth. I think people are a summation of their decisions. And I think if they make the asserted effort that they can, you know, achieve anything they wish to do so.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris. And on this episode of Skeptico, I have an interview with an evil guy, self-proclaimed evil guy. We're going to explore Satanism and the occult with Winter Lake. Stick around after the interview. I want to tee up the discussion that we might have on this show with some questions that I'm going to post on the forum. So I haven't done this before, but I think it'll be interesting to kind of shape the after-show conversation. That's coming up after the interview, but let's get to my dialogue with Winter Lake. Today's guest is a successful author, a consultant on Hollywood horror films. He's also a psychic and sometimes psychic detective, but Winter Lake is best known through his association with the occult, black magic, witchcraft, Satanism. Winter, thanks for joining me today on Skeptico.
Thank you.
As I was just mentioning a minute ago, it's great to have you on. It's exciting because I think some of the ways that you approach some of the same topics we've been talking about is quite unique and quite interesting for our audience. So let's start, though, with some of the basics that certainly won't be basics for a lot of people. What is Satanism? What is maybe a little bit about your book, The Satanic Paradigm? And how does this all fit in the larger context of what we often call the occult?
Satanism is a huge topic that engulfs many different arenas. You have the antiquity dating back to the Hellfire Club, which were basically practicing Satanists and before, even going into medieval ages, and probably since the dawn of man. Mankind, in my opinion, is inherently evil, and they are going against their nature by trying to pretend or put a face on that they're good.
Whenever you talk about evil, now you're getting into this duality of good and bad that is so much a part of the religious paradigm that you kind of were alluding to. And yet at the same time, one of the things that intrigues me with what I've encountered about Satanism is this pull for materialism as well. And so I read Anton LaVey, who maybe you want to tell folks a little bit about who Anton LaVey is. But, you know, the message is, be of this world. Don't deny your experience. You are your own redeemer. And at the same time, Satan isn't real. He's just human power externalized. It's a very materialistic, hey, there isn't any real evil out there. It's just our own human forces. But then I hear you say, you know, evil is engulfing the world. What's going on here?
Indeed. Atheists are self-worshippers. They begin and end with themselves and the materialism that they want to grasp. Anton LaVey espoused that he did not believe in an entity or a powerful force that pervaded the universe. that is where I digress. I am a member of the Church of Satan, but I do believe that there is a power, a force, an energy that is evil, and it is pervading throughout the entire universe. There are many different camps of philosophy within Satanism that are under the broad umbrella of that term Satanism, or that devil worship or satanic worship. And in a lot of these aspects, I have taken from my own personal philosophy and delved into each individual aspect and taken parts of that and kind of assembled my own mechanism. But in different ideologies within Satanism, absolutely, there is many different forms and ways of looking at it.
I don't want to let go of this one thread that I'm on here, materialism in the scientific sense. We are just matter, and that there can be nothing else. There can be no spirit. There can be no continuation of consciousness, which is something I want to talk about in a minute. I don't understand how that can fit in what my limited understanding is of occult practices. How could you be of the belief that it's just this, it's just our lifetime, it's just our experience, there are no entities, there are no supernatural forces? How can that be consistent with a satanic view of the world?
Well, I personally believe that there is a spirit, and I do think that there are other entities, and I stress that. And others who are in satanic practice, some of them do not. We still get along, but others are, as I said, digressing into an atheistic view of self-worship. There is even some agnostics and some more terroristic types that I believe are just death worshipers. But I hope that sort of sorts it out in a very uncomplicated manner. But I do think that there are a spiritual, or is a spiritual aspect to what I personally believe is Satan, or the power that pervades the universe.
So let me jump from there into a topic that we've covered a lot on this show, and that is survival of consciousness. So where we've been coming at this whole consciousness thing is butting up against scientific materialism that says, hey, stop, it's just self-worship, it's just about what we are right now, get over it thing. Wow, you know, there's these hundreds of thousands of cases of people who die and say they experience this otherworldly thing that is beyond their conscious experience here, and then science looks at it and says, the best we can say, there does seem to be some continuation of consciousness. What is the satanic or occult perspective on the afterlife?
I've written actually on consciousness. I call it derivatively the satanic consciousness. In my opinion, it is about power and it is about struggle. I think that once a practitioner of a certain grade who is developed or given his life over to these entities or forces or things that he's merged with, he becomes one with this darkness. It's kind of like an H.R. Giger painting, where you can look at the entire fluidity of emotion, but everything is one. And I think, in my personal opinion of a satanic consciousness, is that we will merge with that darkness, that we will be one with that darkness, and then that darkness will in turn transmigrate.
Okay, but as soon as you get into the whole darkness thing, then you're into the duality, then there has to be a light too. So, I mean, how do we square the dark side with the light?
Well, all of it, in a sense, whether it's a light or a darkness, I feel is all one. I do never see any kind of divergence whatsoever. Everything that we witness is all one power. I just call it satanic, or a form of evil, in the sense that that is what we're a part of. In looking at what Lucifer, the concept of Lucifer's light or the Luciferian light, those are all forms of different aspects of what that darkness can be, because space and time are so convoluted, and it goes into the nature of the universe, in my opinion.
You know, there's a couple of ways to kind of handle the whole satanic paradigm, obvious ways that I'm sure you encounter all the time. And one is just to be completely rejecting of it from, let's say, a religious or a Christian perspective, especially, and saying, wow, that is my spiritual enemy and I am battling him. But the other perspective is, again, the scientific atheist to say, if those silly people want to go dance around in cemeteries and summon up demons, have at it. There isn't any such reality to it at all. How do you prove that it's real to folks? I'm sure you that crops up a lot.
In proof of in a sense, a power or an ability or a supernature that would debunk a lot of the naysayers or a scientist or things like that is actually not that hard to be had. And there's a form here that I'm going into that I rarely go into. But when you are in this, when you are a practitioner, when you study and can make things happen in the world that would not normally happen, when you can bring psychic influence against another and you can see it work, there is an innate ability that maybe someone is born with or some kind of consciousness at work, and that it can be caught through remote viewing or remote influencing. And there's a lot of things like that. But to try to convince a scientist, and I have friends that are scientists that often go after me in these aspects, but they want to see displays of raw power. And the only way that a believer or a non-believer will become a believer is through that sight and through that, you know, sound or that something coming about that wouldn't normally come about. For example, dealing with police or the FBI, you know, they'll have a murder victim. You know, you talk about hardened cynics and non-believers who are of the street that see terrible, horrible things. When I, some stranger to everything they are, when I, who have nothing to do with their force, nothing to do with their reality, can lead them to a building where this person's body is, you know, that is the only way they believe.
Yeah. You know, that's something we've explored quite a bit on the show, Winter, and actually I've had, we did quite a smackdown debate with a debunker skeptic on police psychic detective work, and had a very, very skilled psychic detective on to talk about some of her cases. And we actually interviewed two police detectives who said, wow, you know, we have no way of explaining it, but what this woman was able to kind of bring forth was amazing. So the validity of it, I think, is very well established. The atheistic, materialistic pushback on it and the debunking is a whole other topic we can kind of cover in another way. But I think what you have waded into is, you know, the psychic detective we interviewed is certainly not of the dark side. She is very much of the light. So then we're we're forced to kind of pull the whole thing apart. And the way I describe it, so we jump over the chasm and we say, okay, as strange as it sounds, there are these other forces. And there's people tapping into these other forces. And there's this other dimension that we're trying to explain. Now we have someone like you who comes along and says, yeah, I tap into the darker side of it. And then we have somebody like Nancy who says, hey, I'm tapping into the lighter side of it. Can you maybe kind of spec out for us what's going on here, how we can have two different people channeling into this force, this energy from completely different perspectives?
Yes. You know, it's kind of goes along with whatever different mantra makes it work for you, makes your mind click to get in certain perception. And I think that if Nancy is looking at something from a perspective of her light guides or whatever she wants to feel them to be, that's probably a working, you know, mechanism that is in her reference. But probably more than likely she is tapping into the same entity that I call, you know, darkness or Satan. Maybe they're in denial of it, but I do feel that that is the case. I don't think that there is a white or a black. I think, you know, there's white witches and stuff. They want to dance around it or be altruistic. And whereas I'm not, and I see things for what they are, in my opinion. But it's more than likely a tapping of the same source to achieve the same kind of outcome.
Interesting. You know, and that leads me into another thing I just wanted to kind of touch on, because it was another interesting interview exchange that we had, and that's with a very highly respected doctor, Dr. Rick Strassman, who got interested in studying DMT, the drug, the psychoactive drug. And the research is really phenomenal, because what he found is that people who took DMT entered into another realm and encountered these beings that, for all intents and purposes, sound a lot like the descriptions that you hear in a lot of occult literature. And the interesting thing scientifically, of course, is that these beings match perfectly with beings that are reported throughout time, throughout other cultures, that are unconnected with any of this research. So there's some reasons to think that there's some reality to this other dimension kind of concept. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, psychoactive drugs bridging this other dimension, and what is in that other dimension?
It's so varied, and there are so many other different dimensions that it's probably limitless, as our space is limitless, and the different scales that were even there. Arcturus, which is a sun that can be seen at night as a star from our planet, eclipses our sun by 1,000-fold. You could literally put 1,000 different of our suns inside the star. And I couldn't imagine the scale of the planets that are, encircling that, but I'm deviating. But these other entities, yes, classic scenarios that have been going on since the medieval times, since the first experimentations with poison and different types of other things and formaldehyde in order to induce some kind of psycho viewing of something supernatural. It's very standardized. They all see kind of demonic forces or alien creatures. Why is that? In my opinion, I can tell you, because I feel that those are probably dark entities on the outskirts of equilibrium, that they are mirrors of us, which we are. We're very evil. Then why would we embrace that? Then why do we see that? Why is it classically always like supernatural 101? You know, DMT, I've read some of the studies on it. These people go into these rooms within their minds, and they always see the same type of demonic forces. Now, why would that be? The whole demonic force is natural, that it, there's something there for me personally that makes it a nature of evil, that mankind is sort of going its wrong direction, that mankind embraces violence and video games and film and the world and their lasciviousness and the news and the destruction and the general whole entirety of our planet. That is what people are embracing. You know, they embrace that nature. And it's been very understudied as to why humans want to delve into the destructiveness of ourselves. But I think it has to do with a lot of denial, because we are mirrors of what we are, but we're denying what we are.
You know, that's a very, very interesting perspective that's going to be very challenging to a lot of people. And I think we have to keep jumping back on these two, to these two points, you know, which I think kind of counterbalance each other, and that is the reality of it. So we talk about DMT, we talk about police detective, psychic detective work, and we say there's a reality there that seems to be undeniable. And then we jump back and we say, what is the interpretation of that? What does that mean? You know, are we all evil? Do we have an evil nature? Do we just like bad and wicked things? I'm really interested in that interplay, but as soon as we get into that discussion, we got to keep coming back, in my opinion, to the light. And so we go back to the near-death experience, and a very prominent component of that that comes up again and again and again is the light, is the all-loving being, the all-accepting being. And even if we want to take away any kind of religious connotations to it, because those are varied in the experience, right? The NDE experiencers don't all say it's Jesus, don't all say it's Shiva or Buddha. It's varied. But what they're consistent in is the light and the love. So don't we have to kind of incorporate that into it too? Because there seems to be a reality there.
It's interesting that, yes, in like near-death experiences, that there is a tunnel or darkness, or that they're reaching for the light. It's easy to discount it and say, oh, you know, they're in this pseudo place, or that their body is under such extreme manipulation that they're sort of exposed to this, or that they were dead for a certain amount of time. And so was the mind on its own kind of course, because it is reptilian, and it is like, really, unless it's destroyed first, it's like the last thing to really let go, even though they say that the brain is dead. I'll go into this just briefly, and I know we're kind of diverging from what you just said about light. But yes, I mean, is there a light? Probably is. Is there love? Is that a feeling that is innately a nature within man? Yes. I mean, we can love ourselves, and we can, you know, love a lot of things. But I feel that personally, we need to love selectively. And I think that to give universal love is to open oneself up to manipulation, because in our reality, humans in general take kindness for weakness. And so in getting into love in general, it does exist. I think people want it and yearn for it. I think it's an automatic reaction in a very tumultuous situation if one is exposed to that, because people revert to that automatically. I've seen some horrid car wrecks, I'm sure you have too, and people in near-death experiences, you know, that is automatically a human mechanism that is gone to that, you know, because it's you're demeaned, you're diminished, your ego is destroyed, you're laying on a stretcher and you're dying. So it may in turn, from my explanation, be a reaction to such a horrid event that is where we go or embrace. But what comes after that is what's, you know, all hypothetical. But it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I think if someone is dying and it's horrible when that occurs, or if there's some kind of terrible event and if that's what they're going to, then that brings them inner peace to be able to let go. But in my sights, and what I've kind of pushed my mind to perceive, is that it's not all the light that is out there. I think that is more a mechanism of the mind.
Fascinating. And I like how you're upfront and accountable, you know, but when you say, hey, we can't deny the light, you know, and the light seems to be a part of it too, let's find a way to figure out how that works. And then you say how you've resolved that from your worldview, which is fine. That's your worldview. But I just wanted to say, that really comes through to me, and it drew me to wanting to talk to you, because I felt like here's someone who is going to just lay their cards on the table however they fall. And even if deception is part of the game, at least I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm going to try and figure out the deception. And if I'm deceiving you, well, that's part of what we're all doing here too. We're all in show business. We're all trying to deceive each other and manipulate each other. It's the nature of who we are.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Yes, I mean, weapons of mass deception are used all the time. I try not to do that, because I don't really have time to deceive. It's a lot of work to deceive, but it's being used constantly by our governments, by anything, by, you know, it's, you know, the nature of humanity is that they're liars and whores, and that goes into where I said that's there is a darkness or an innateness about that. Why do people choose to reach or so much deception? Is it easier to lie than to expose to the truth? I don't know. For me, I've always found it to be more difficult to wrangle in lies.
Okay, let's switch gears just a minute here. One of the topics that you talk most convincingly about, or at least very convincingly about, is the hypocrisy of religion. And of course, it's an easy target. And I think also you make a very interesting observation about Islam that I'm sure is there. I'd never thought about in quite that way, but you talk about the sexual denial that you're supposed to undergo, and then your reward for that in the afterlife are all these sexual pleasures. And I thought, you know, what a twisted way of kind of looking at human nature. And I think it's just kind of a pretty strong point from your perspective.
Yes. I mean, the whole idea that an Islamist, if he dies for his religion of abstinence and death, which leads to death, will be rewarded with this sexual lust with these 40 different women who have never been with another man, espoused to be virgins. I think it's insane, but it's written and they believe it. It's totally hypocritical. It's just dark. It's evil. And that is the nature of the beast with a lot of these different religions. And it goes hand in hand with what my philosophy is about evil and the true nature of evil. And if anything, that is a low guttural level to it, because there is levels of evil. There is these Mephistophelian heights, and then you have these low guttural, you know, types. So it's all varied, and there's a lot of different realms to it. But Islam is a threat to, I think, any normal human being on planet Earth, whether they're satanic or not. They're coming. They're the largest religion in the world. They're pushing women into slavery. They're treating people like cattle. It's just ridiculous.
I think some people might be a little bit turned off with this evil encompassing the world and evil everywhere, and we're all embracing evil and moving towards evil. But I think when you really pull it apart, there's a certain truth to it that keeps cropping up. You know, if we take this religious aspect and look at Christianity beyond the examples we just talked about, you know, there was a very interesting book about a year ago by a guy named Jeff Charlotte, who did an expose on the most influential, powerful Christian political organization in Washington, D.C., a group called The Family. They're the prayer breakfast club group, whatever. And they got caught up, and it was made pretty big news when they were part of the C Street sex scandal, where they were helping these congressmen hook up in this townhouse that they had. And then when you look behind, as this author did, you found some very, very overtly dark aspects to this Christian group that says, hey, you know, it's really all about power, it's all about control, and Hitler and Mao Zedong and Jesus were all the same, and that they could control people and had this power. I mean, when you do step into your perspective, Winter, you do start seeing this darkness crop up in some very unsuspecting places, don't you?
Yes, the government, or the body known as the government, which is made up of the individuals within it, you know, are really going back to the big word agenda. Every individual within the body known as a government has their own agenda, whether that's getting laid, having a girl there that they can pick up on Saturday or do whatever, and this nonsense, which I think is a waste of time. They're more focused on the self-worship. And that is what's going to cause the ultimate downfall most of them as individuals and governments, because they're trying to set themselves to a higher standard, you know. And I know a lot of people in the government, you know. I've shook hands with a lot of these people, and they don't know who I am, but I know who they are, and I know what's going on. And they're about the greed, which is the king. They follow the money. They're just totally convoluted and seduced by the materialism level of Satanism, whether they want to believe it or not. And they're enshrouding it in the hypocrisy of Christianity and enshrouding it in the idea that they're better, but really they're blind to their own Faustian bargain.
And you really have to wonder if it stops there. I mean, if we venture into the intelligence community, it's pretty well documented that the CIA has done more than just dabbling in the occult. There's a project, you can Google this if you want. It's Project MK Often. And here's a quote from the director of the project, who said that their goal was to explore the world of black magic and, quote unquote, harness the forces of darkness and challenge the concept that the inner reaches of our mind are beyond reach. And I actually heard some interviews with some folks who were involved and remember this project back in the 70s. They were actively going out and hiring demonologists, other occult black magic people to try and summon up these spiritual forces and harness them. And part of the reason was, hey, the Russians might be doing this. We have to do this too. But you also have to wonder if it isn't just part of this, we have to win at all costs, whatever it takes, which is built into our government and I guess just about any government throughout time.
Exactly. And it really it has to do with individuals. When you say win at all costs, it means that if they lose, that they're going to lose their stance, their power, their money flow. So they're really entrenched in wanting to see success, whether it's for altruism or whatever government they're in at that time. Most of the different individuals that are in these operations are absolutely saturated with demon stuff and all of this. These are the types of people that hire people to bring in coup d'etats against other structure, that will stab people on train platforms, that will do anything it takes in order to secure themselves and secure their position. So I'm not like that. I don't go there. I'm not interested in trying to take somebody down. Although if I am crossed, I will. I think anybody would. I don't have to do that too much anymore now. But these types of individuals are immense and they are totally satanic. And they are in the echelons of government in many different arenas, whether it's China, with Russia, with many of the different tyrannies, or different areas like that that have tyranny or dictatorships. It's all about securing it for the me, and making sure that what I have is kept and that the sheeple are under my control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It kind of leads me into another area that, you know, I want to get your thoughts on the secrecy angle of this and maybe even the atheist cover story. You know, the Bohemian Grove intrigues me. I mean, so here you have this kind of ultra super elitist meetup. You know, the number of presidents that have been there is just unbelievable. Almost every president has been there. Top CEOs, top-notch power brokers from around the world are attending Bohemian Grove and openly, once you're inside, engaging in occult practices. I mean, there's mock child sacrifice, worship to this giant owl. I mean, how these guys can go back and campaign as Christians is beyond me. But then what's interesting is, one, it's totally secret, so no one was ever able to crack it open. And then number two, when they do crack it open, there's always the oh my gosh, you know, you believe that stuff? Come on, it's nothing. You know, back to our other discussion about, is this stuff real? And it seems like there's a real need to then jump over on the other fence and say, oh, you don't believe any of that stuff, do you? Is the atheistic perspective somewhat of a cover story for what's going on with these occult practices?
No, what's really going on is business. I mean, I'm not trying to tout ego here. And I'll go and I'll rarely mention something, but I've been to Bohemian Grove. I've been able to go through the gates and hang out with people and like chill and stuff. To be honest, Bohemian Grove is just like a summer vacation area for a bunch of the power elite to get together and sort of mingle and talk about different deals and businesses that can be established. They do, however, conduct where I didn't attend is where you drew the line. And that's where the mystery begins. And that's what's bizarre, in my opinion, about it, too. And it alludes that there may be something more going on where you get these complete and total strangers, but they will garner these robes and they will carry on with these bizarre rituals that are neither really satanic or that are neither really Christian. They're more like these ancient pagan rites. And, you know, one being this rite to the sun, which is where they do this mock child sacrifice. And I mention this to people, and it's documented on the web, although you can't really believe what you read on the web. But, I mean, unless you see it. I never really saw it. I've just seen photographs from different people that have gone in there and photographed it. But yeah, they conduct these paganistic type of things. And what's bizarre to me, what I'm saying is that they're total strangers to each other. But I don't know. Is there an NWO where they're plotting and scheming? That could possibly be it as well.
You know, the other thing, I wonder, do you see a connection with the more general kind of evilness that you were mentioning earlier? This, because that's what it seems like to me, even if you don't go into this super-duper conspiratorial stuff, you just say, this is challenging people to cross these barriers, these taboos that have been set, and to say, I need to just be myself. I need to respond to my inner drives, whatever they are. That's what I see it as, is more of a way to get people past their inhibitions, which are religious or this light inhibitions, and move towards the darkness. Do you see any reality to that, or you think I'm reading too much into it?
Well, overcoming inhibitions, I mean, that's a huge part of it. Some have taken it to great extremes. I mean, look at serial killers. And I'm really not fond of serial killers or child killers. I just think they're extremely selfish and very stupid, but they do it. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's what level you're going to overcome some of this, these conditionings that have been placed upon you since childhood. It's to what level you're willing to allow yourself to step out of the box and be what is known as Crowley used to call thelemic. But I mean, the idea of hypocrisy is so ingrained within us.
You know, one other area that seems kind of totally outside of this, but you made me think of it when you touched on Crowley, that's the relationship between stage magic and folks like Houdini and the black magic and the occult. You had some interesting thoughts on that in an interview that I listened to. Was there a connection between Houdini and the occult?
Yes, there was. Houdini was a friend with H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft was the renowned sci-fi writer, not scientific, although nowadays he's revered as a god of science or something, but really he invented a code, a religion. And they were together in New York City doing a lot of different rituals and experiments with narcotics and wanting to tap into the other side. It was a huge endeavor for Houdini, which was a major skeptic of any kind of spiritualism, to find actual evidence of spiritual or supernatural activity, which I do feel that he did find with H.P. Lovecraft during that Red Hook experiment.
What was the Red Hook experiment, and what makes you think Houdini did go from being a spiritualist and seance skeptic to someone who actually believed that there was some validity to these other powers?
He had witnessed a few things that he couldn't explain. He said he could find any flaw within other magicians and so on and so on. But when it came to Lovecraft, he couldn't explain some of the things away so readily about some of the events that were going on within his dreams and with the precognitions that he was experiencing after Lovecraft ghost wrote for him under the pyramids. During the Red Hook experiment, basically, it was just meetups between Houdini, Sonia Green, who was H.P. Lovecraft's wife, and also Houdini's wife, whose name escapes me. But it was the drive by Houdini's wife really to seek supernatural kind of experiences as well. So there was an entire cabal of individuals there that were really pushing the envelope and practicing the idea that, you know, seance worthiness was real and such, and even going back to what we had talked about, Houdini is a huge skeptic. He would tear different spiritualists apart. He was at war with a lot of his other fellow magicians, and he was at war with them, and he would fraud them out. I mean, he would find them out. But I do feel that he was trying to find a real, you know, supernatural experience.
You know, the last thing I guess I wanted to venture into is something that you alluded to when you were talking about the failed proposition that is Christianity, at least from your view, and the hypocrisy of it, and the denial that kind of gets in the way of personal freedoms and self-development. But I wonder, can't some of those same problems be reflected back on the satanic or the occult or the black magic thing? And I guess what I think of when I say that is I think the Buddhist perspective and the idea that, you know, it's all going to be played out anyway, and that it's all suffering, you know, and that no one gets through it anyway. So even if you practice Satanism and you try and live for the moment or live for yourself, you're going to die. You're probably going to get sick and die. No one escapes that. Crowley didn't escape that. Anton LaVey didn't escape that. In the end, we all face the same fate. So isn't there kind of that same contradiction, I guess, in the hypocrisy of Christianity? Doesn't that also apply over here to Satanism? I mean, life is suffering. That's the Buddhist first noble truth.
It does. It does, in a sense. And that is where I feel that a lot of scientists are now trying to even break that foothold, that they're, you know, through singularity, which is coming by about 2040, 2050, that it won't be plausible to die, that actually we will be able to download our consciousness and to a cybernetic organism and be able to live in some kind of fashion forever. But that is a frontier yet to come. I think we will see it in our lifetime. But yes, the hypocrisy exists probably even more so in any satanic or occult practices. To a lot of people, it's a phase that they're going through. They are very destructive and dangerous people, some of them. They're not nice people. Christians, necessarily, I mean, they can be pretty ruthless too. But Satanists are not. I mean, satanic practitioners on different levels can be very, very dangerous. Probably more so than the Christians. And a lot of Satanists don't like to say that. And they want to glaze it over and say, oh, we're all nice, just get along bands and so on. That's not necessarily the truth. There's a lot of hatred. There's a lot of anger that's self-created. I personally don't have that. I have a Mephistophelian kind of concept of where I'm at with things. But yes, hypocrisy is alive and well. It's in our nature. It's in all different facets. It's even in Buddhism, because I feel that they're very self-righteous. It is not necessary to suffer. You know, I'm not suffering. Life really isn't all that hard, you know. And I think for the average citizen of the world nowadays, it's really not all that hard. I think people are a summation of their decisions. And I think if they make the assertive effort that they can, you know, achieve anything they wish to do so.
So, Winter, what's going on with you? Any books coming out? What are some projects that people might find interesting that you're involved in?
I'm working on a motion picture about my own screenplay called War in Oz, which is a take on the Wizard of Oz concepts. It's going to be a graphic novel, and then it's going to be punted on to being a motion picture. It's just still in its neophyte stages as far as that, but that's a current project I'm working on. I have a book that's going to be coming out that talks about Lucifer extensively, called Luciferian Incantus, and it really goes into some future stuff for Satanism about how we're evolving as a satanic species.
And your most popular book is still The Satanic Paradigm, is that right?
It is. It's sold thousands. And then the Book of Black Magic the Book of Black Magic, which is like this esoteric book, is beating it. So whatever, you know, ironically. So,
well, thanks so much for joining me today. It was a great and interesting dialogue, and I appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks again to Winter Lake for joining me today on Skeptico. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of this show, what I thought we might do, and I haven't done this before, but I'm looking forward to stimulating the conversation we're going to have in this way. I want to pose three questions, and I'm going to post them as different threads on the Skeptico forum. Now, if you haven't checked out the Skeptico forum, you're going to want to do that. It's really great. We have a pretty good interaction over there, a nice group of people. gets a little testy at times, but nothing too dramatic. And in general, some really smart people. You'll learn a lot. I've certainly learned a lot through the forum. So check it out if you haven't done so. But here are the three questions I'd like to dig into. Question number one, are there evil spirits? Once we get past this hardcore materialistic understanding and we acknowledge that there's these other spirit beings, however we want to define them, then the natural question, at least in this topic, would be, are some of those spirits evil? Is there such a thing as darkness in that spiritual realm, dimension, whatever you want to call it? So that's question number one. Question number two, is our materialistic culture inherently evil? So, you know, whether you judge it or not, the society that we live in, succeed, bomb Libya, bomb other people, protect our country, all those things wind up creating a lot of circumstances that some of us would look at and say, hey, that's evil. And the question is the society that we've constructed and the way we've constructed it inherently evil? And the third and final question, what is the relationship between the dark and the light? So again, I tried to approach this with Winter. I don't know if I really closed the loop on it, but if we're going to have this level two discussion, and by level two discussion, I mean, if we get past this idea of prove it, survival of consciousness, prove it. If we get past that and we say, okay, we crossed the chasm. Yes, there's a reality to this spiritual dimension. Now we have to start pulling apart and we say, okay, there seems to be a light energy, a love energy, and then there seems to be this darker energy. And what is the relationship between the two? Are they really just the same? Are they always in all of us? Are they competing in some kind of battle? Let's pull that apart and see where it goes. So three questions to tee up there in our forum. So if you're new to the show and you'd like to know more information about Skeptico, please visit the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll find links to all our previous shows, a link to the forum that I just mentioned. You can also connect with me via Facebook or email, however you want to. Love to hear from you. I love to hear people who have say, hey, I just discovered Skeptico and I'm working my way through the backlog of 150 interviews. It's great. And I sometimes see people and they'll comment or they'll send me an email and you can see where they're at. They're at episode 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. And then it's just kind of neat to see them go through the whole library. So that's there if you want to do it. I really encourage you to do that. Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Skeptico. Have a couple of interesting shows coming up. Please stay with me for all of that. Until next time, bye for now.